Welcome to the Kentucky Derby Moments podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Quick note of thanks to our sponsors, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Delaware Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, Maryland Jockey Club, Facing Tipton & Company, Virginia Equine Alliance and the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, and the Maryland Horse Industry Board. Thanks to all. On these podcasts during the coming week, we'll be looking into some people's fondest memories, big wagers, or other Kentucky Derby moments that they recall.
So we're joined by Teresa Gennaro here on the Derby Moments podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. And Teresa is our longtime correspondent, and her work has appeared all over the racing universe, and she appears with us here by phone to talk about her fond Derby memories. And Teresa, I understand you've been to the Derby a handful of times.
Yes, I was lucky enough in 2011 when the now defunct Thoroughbred Times was still operating. Then editor Ed DeRosa asked me to come and be a part of Thoroughbred Times Derby coverage, which, as somebody who had started a blog in 2007, it was just an amazing experience to go to the Derby for the first time at all and to have it be as a member of the press. It was such an amazing opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, talk about, I've been to the Derby a handful of times myself, and I talk a little bit, if you would, about that experience of like that first time at the Derby. What an interesting experience that is for a racing fan.
Yeah. I'm not a real big event sort of person. So I have to say there was a part of me that was really kind of intimidating and dreading being in the same place with like 130 or 140,000 other people. I recognize that it was an incredible privilege to be able to go as a member of the press and not really have to worry about where you were going to sit. And this was when the press box was on the sixth floor of Churchill Downs. So we had assigned stations on a balcony that overlooked the whole racetrack. And I felt like, I mean, people say this all the time, and it's kind of a cliche to feel sort of blessed and humbled by the opportunity, but it really was quite extraordinary to be at my first Kentucky Derby and to be able to see it from that vantage point and to be around the backstretch in the morning, to be able to go back to the barns and talk to trainers, to talk to owners, to get a sense of what they were thinking about their horses and how they would do, and to see the horses in the morning. I mean, the backside is such a scene. There's so many people there. It was just, you kind of wondered if there was enough room for the horses to get through. And it was just a way of being there to understand the magnitude of the event as an event.
Yeah, I found, I have found being on the backside, it's a little bracing the moment when you sort of look around and there's, Animal Kingdom and whoever else, all these big horses. And you say, holy smokes, there is tens of millions of dollars of horse flesh, that I could hit with a stone from here. And it's a little bracing to realize that these are the best equine athletes of their generation. And, I could go pet any one of them and they're all right here in front of me.
Yeah. It definitely was like that. It was also, most trainers were also, I mean, it's such a stressful week, but they were so accommodating and so helpful and, nervous, but also, I wouldn't say necessarily confident, but with just a sort of sense of composure about the whole thing. And I was really struck by their ability to maintain that composure in the face of so many people and such pressure and such media hype.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Now, did you have a rooting interest as well when you attended that Derby, or were you just strictly on deadline?
I had a little bit of a rooting interest. I didn't feel like super invested in horses that year. I kind of liked Animal Kingdom because, to be honest, my dad really liked him. My dad had been following him, and my dad is pretty good at picking the Derby winner. He does it more often than seems fair. And there was that whole story, that Robbie Alvarado had been taken off the mound, and that was when there was all the drama that year with Uncle Mo getting scratched the day before the race.
Yes.
He was, the New York horse that went, who were kind of running around and talking to trainer Todd Pletcher and owner Mike Rapoli. And, obviously Rapoli's disappointment was so profound. And then John Velasquez switches over and gets the mount and ends up winning the Derby for two guys who are incredibly, you know, well-liked and well-respected in the sport. So I thought that was a really cool storyline. That was also the year that immediately after the race, Animal Kingdom was owned by Team Valor, and Barry Irwin, the managing partner, like in the press conference, just sort of like talked about all the trainers that he had fired because they were cheaters and disreputable and lacked integrity, which is kind of a weird thing to be saying when you just won the Kentucky Derby with some of like, the greatest people in the sport. Yeah. So it was kind of like watching, you know, this 36 hours, you know, Uncle Mo probably wasn't going to be a favorite anymore. You know, earlier in the year, he had looked like that might happen, but he didn't run a Goodwood Memorial. He had obviously been sick in that week or so running up to the Kentucky Derby. He wasn't going to be the favorite, but still a major high profile contender is gone the day before the race. You know, Robbie Alvarado had gotten in, he had been hurt. I think he'd been tossed from a mount that week, and Barry Irwin ends up taking him off it. Then you have this nice feel good story for Graham Motion and those guys. And then Barry Irwin comes up and basically says, like, the sport's full of terrible people, except for the guys who work with me. It was really like this whole incredible range of emotions and storylines, which was pretty fun.
And the Derby is always good for that. So now you've been to a couple other derbies as well. Anything quite as memorable as the Animal Kingdom experience?
Yes. The next year, I also went in 2012. I was also working for Thoroughbred Times that year. And my race assignment was to get loser's quotes, which was I was supposed to split up responsibility with another reporter. And after the race, we were supposed to go around to as many losing trainers as we could and get quotes on their race. So I go down, I know, right? Really fun. First time I'd ever been assigned to do that. And I have to say, people were incredibly gracious. That was the year Doug O'Neill had I'll Have Another. It wasn't a huge long shot. He was about 15-1. But I don't think that he was being counted on as somebody who was really likely to win the race. And I go down and I'm watching the race along the rail, not far from the finish line. And I'm standing right near Doug O'Neill, and I'm with the other reporter. And I looked and I was like, well, he'll be easy to get. Like, he'll be right there. We can just grab him after the race. except that his horse won the race.
Right.
And it was also that was the thing that made me realize how cool technology could be, because it was such a missed opportunity. You know, 2011, kind of the beginning of like ubiquitous social media, iPhones, video, all of that. And I'm watching this and I'm watching Doug O'Neill like lose his mind, jump up and down, throwing his hat up in the air, hugging everybody. And all I was thinking was, why do I not have my iPhone video trained on him right this second? Because this is gold. So that's what I remember about that derby.
That's interesting. You know, it is interesting that I did a story once on horses that had finished second place in a day at the track. And, you know, talking to the connections afterwards is really interesting, because you have such a gamut of, and maybe you saw this as what the Derby losers, you know, you got some people who lost and they're saying, hey, my horse ran great, I'm really happy with today. And then other guys, it's like, you know, you want to say it's okay, you're going to live to fight another day. And you know, it's just, there's even for the horses that don't win, there's an incredible range of emotion I found. Did you see that in the Derby?
Yeah. And it was like, it was so terrible to have to go talk to these people who are obviously so incredibly disappointed, but still being gracious. And the one who stands out for me was Michael Matz. So like, the horses cross the wire and I, you know, run around and try to grab some quotes. And then I literally run across the racetrack to get to the backstretch to try to find people. And I happened to run across Michael Matz, and he had Union Rags that year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think people thought Union Rags was a pretty serious contender. And I saw him walking toward me and his face was just so disappointed. And I stopped him and I just said, you know, Mr. Matz, do you have a minute? And he was just incredibly gracious and sort of said, like, we don't know what happened, we're going to go find out. But he, you know, in that moment where he must have been so crushed, he still stopped and talked for a minute. And I will never forget his graciousness in that moment or the look on his face.
Yeah, it's got to be disappointing. I know how disappointing it is to send out a logical contender and, you know, a cheap claiming ring.
Yeah.
So obviously
yeah,
the Derby's
right.
Quite a bit different. Anything you're looking forward to or rooting for as we head just a couple days to the 2016 Kentucky Derby?
Um, I'm not there this year. I'll be watching it from a Harlem Derby party up in Harlem here in New York City. So the experience will obviously be quite different. I always like to root for the New York horses. You know, I like to see the horses that have run that run here that I get to see either run as two-year-olds or early in their three-year-old year, or even some of the trainers who are just based here. I would love to see Mo Heyman, you know, kind of rebound off that terrible Florida Derby and see if he can do it. I mean, the McLaughlin family is so terrific, and I think it would be, you know, Kieran's from Kentucky. It would be so cool to see him win. I think obviously it'll be interesting to see Nyquist, who seems to be not getting a lot of respect for a horse that's undefeated, to see if he'll be overlooked a little bit, or if, you know, he'll, people will begin to think that he is the best of what people seem to think is a pretty mediocre crop, which may be, you know, a little bit too damning at this point. But it's funny. It's just, I think we're going into this derby where there's a little bit of a sense that there are a lot of different horses that could win. And, you know, it's always fun to see somebody who's considered an outsider get that chance to be in the spotlight.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's true. Teresa, thank you so much for joining us on Derby Moments podcast, and good luck with the Kentucky Derby.
Great, thank you, Frank.
Derby Moments, and for more on the Kentucky Derby all week long, check us out at The Racing Biz, www.theracingbiz.com, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.